would like to say first that, sure, the organized borough has been slow in implementation in rural Alaska, but the legislature, who by law is the assembly for the unorganized borough, for the first time, seems to want to move toward this purported local control. But like my old acquaintance and very dear friend, who is my next door neighbor when I'm living over in Bethel, Eddie Hoffman, I would like to caution that haste makes waste. And going through the bills, I've cut them, my comments down considerably. So 348, 349 needs more time, more study, and more involvement on a local level, and less of the tail wagging the dog. 350, same, needs lots of work. It needs a lot of work in the line of people involved. You know, it's fine that committees come into our area and for hearings. However, most of the ones that have came in the past 6 or 8 months have been, they just haven't given enough notice, and they haven't provided for a consolidated hearing, one that we get together and talk about it a little beforehand, and then come in with a consolidated viewpoint, one that would include all of the villages and all of the organizations. 351, 352, I see no apparent objections to either one of these. 353 needs more work, again, to include consolidated hearings in the areas involved. The passage at this time of any of these bills, I see that, or I feel that we're abrogating and evading self-determination and the rights of people to determine their own destiny. I speak very strongly against allowing a single board, as cited in the House Bill 584, I think, to express the views of both borough management and borough schools, or one board acting as both boards. It brings up a couple of interesting questions in the instance of Nome, which has a council, which has a school board. How does this tie in and meld with a borough board and a school board? I just don't quite understand that. I'm certain that it is taken into consideration. And finally, Madam Chairman, to my many friends in Juneau, I would like to remind them that my annual birthday party will be on the 26th of February, and this year it will be held here at home, and those of you that can make the party are certainly welcome. And with that, I'll turn it back to you.
Happy birthday, Rick.
Yes, Senator McKee has a comment.
Just wanted to wish you a very, very happy birthday, Andy.
I wonder if we might not consider a hearing up in Nome about that date. It sounds like fun. I might make comment, Andy, that the questions you raised on SB 354 or House Bill 584 are really right on, and that's one of the reasons we're recommending elimination of that kind, because just some of the issues you raised seem to be causing some problems. I would hope that you take another look at the bills. As a matter of fact, the issue's been raised several times. We feel that these are leading toward self-determination by an area. That's the whole intent. For instance, Senate Bill 350 changes nothing in the amount of services and so on going toward rural Alaska. What it does do is to say that the state needs to start to recognize some common boundaries out there so that there can be greater coordination of services, and that's the intent. So I'd be very happy to discuss that issue with you, and I'm very appreciative of your general comments. Was there anything, a final comment, Andy, you wish to make?
Well, yes, ma'am, Madam Chairman. Only that involve the people. I realize that, you know, that the unorganized borough has been here a long, long time, and that nothing has been done about it. But in our haste to correct this, let me caution, you know, a little more involvement. We need it. There are people out in our area that that just don't know. And when you don't know, you go back to the oldest rule of politics: when you don't know, vote no. And we advise no.
Fine. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. We now hear from Dave Olerud from Haynes, please.
I want to thank you for the opportunity to come down here and make a few comments extemporaneously on my experience with Third Class Borough. Now, at the present time, I'm a businessman in Haynes. I have had the experiences of serving as a borough mayor, and I've served on the city council and as well as other organizations within the area of Haynes. And it seems as though that it always boils down that we in Haynes are a little bit of exception to the rule. We're the only ones with a third class borough, and listening today to the teleconferences that are going on throughout the state of Alaska, we're also without that. But who knows, possibly a third class borough is something that we should look at very carefully because of discrimination. Let me just extemporaneously make a few comments and salvage as much time as I possibly can for you. First of all, from the experiences I've had with third class borough and with government per se, I feel very strongly that the local government is the most important aspect of government for the people of the state of Alaska. We have to have the power reverting back to the people in the rural areas or into local government. Now, I feel very strongly that over the years that I have served on governments, that a government should be very similar to a shoe on a foot. It would be very, very disastrous on the part of a parent to take a look at a shoe on a foot and let that shoe last for many, many years without changing the shoe. It's quite obvious the child is going to grow up and that shoe is going to start pinching. I feel very strongly that local government should be such that it can adjust to the realities of development within the community. Now, a third-class borough in Haynes does not adjust to the realities of the community. It is great as far as the school board is concerned and as far as collecting taxes for that purpose is concerned. But going beyond this point, if our community develops to the point where unfortunately, we're going to develop sooner or later. Our population is increasing, and we're going to have to face the fact that our government on the third class borough is not going to do the job. I'll give you an example of where it will not do the job. In the last 5 years, we've had a negative influence on our economy. We have seen our tax base erode by several millions of dollars, primarily because the utilization of resource, primarily here timber, has not been made available to our community. The third class borough can do nothing but collect taxation to stimulate the economy, to provide for the services that are desperately needed, schools, and so on. It can do nothing. basically is a taker of a tax, but it cannot do anything to stimulate the tax base the private sector has so desperately needed. We also found out in the last couple of years that the state of Alaska decrees that there should be land classification, land planning. Well, in the third class borough, we are still regimented to schools and collecting of taxes. We found out that the state Department of Natural Resources is not necessarily interested in what happens as far as classification and the will of the local people. We fought a little over a year, year and a half, to have a classification through the State Department of Natural Resources as applicable to the people of Haines. It was a very sobering experience. Another thing I like to emphasize is a third class borough. What is it really? Because of necessity, since 1968 when the third class borough came into existence, and to serve our people, we have, in a sense, made a elastic clause out of third class borough. It has been stretched to fit the needs of the people, even though possibly it is stretching the legality of a third class borough. It has been stretched to the point that what do we have? A lot of times I would classify it as, in a sense, monster. We have done things that basically we were not entitled to, the state of Alaska has allowed us to. We have asked them, what do we do with roads and trails? They say, well, it could possibly be construed as education. We have asked them what to do about a multitude of problems, and anywhere from boat harbors to museums to cultural facilities, and on we go. So the third class borough in Haines has been stretched. But not only has it been stretched in an elastic sense, but it also has created a monster in the sense of our city. Because the city is like a parent, it's the last resort. Anytime you have trouble and the child can't take care of it, you go back to that parent, and the parent must accept the responsibility of it. Our city has been pulled to many extremes, primarily because the area-wide government has not been able to adjust the needs of it. The only thing that I find negative is that I do not like, in a sense, to get to the point where government mandates government. I believe the people should have enough common sense to adjust the realities of the situation and do what is necessary. Bill 354 mandates that within so many years, I believe by 1984, that the third class borough will cease to exist. I would hope that this group is working very diligently to set up efficient government throughout the unorganized areas and organized areas of the state of Alaska, could possibly have the intestinal fortitude to make decisions that could possibly be not popular with certain segments, but is necessary for the continuation of a viable rural area. And
Mr. Olerud, what are you suggesting?
What am I suggesting? What I'm suggesting is possibly, I do not envy a position that you are taking at the present time, because the third class borough is a reality because the state government did not have the intestinal fortitude a long time ago to say now that we should be a second class borough. We were left in limbo, and because we were left in limbo, we have created many problems for the state legislature, which has been involved for the present time. I feel very strongly now that we should, as a community in Haines, evaluate very carefully. No pressure from the state will not hurt at all. I do not feel that it will be necessary to mandate anything. I believe the local community in Haines will be able to take care of the problems that are coming up if we get rid of the hysteria. I feel at the present time that we have so many traumatic things pressed upon the people of Haines, particularly the economy, the long-range timber planning, and so on, that from this we have, I believe, become very strong in a sense. I think we're capable of tackling the problem with local government to provide a decent economy for our people.
Fine. I appreciate your comments. I might suggest, just from some comments that were made when the bill was introduced, that people from both sides of the aisle in in Haynes might wish to communicate with the senator and representatives from the area as to their feeling on the third-class borough. And I do appreciate your taking the time to give us these comments, and I know you'll be watching the legislation carefully. Was there anything else?
Just to follow up on it and state now that it's very nice to see that the only thing else I have comments on is 352. It's nice to see that the state legislature is looking at the financial responsibility of a particular bill in relationship to the local communities. And I also, I'm very negative when it comes to saying that it's nice that the legislature spends money on behalf of the local community. I feel in the sense that the majority of the money should come from the local community. But you have allocated monies on 351 that would be very beneficial. Now, we talked the other day in relationship to implementation of these acts. Now, would a third-class borough, in a sense, be given funds to go through the research necessary to go into a second-class borough or a first-class borough or what it may be? Now, in here we have, I believe, a clear indication that if you're an unorganized area, there is assistance, financial assistance, aid in coming up with a decision as to what type of government is best for our people. I would like to make sure now that the third-class borough is included if it's necessary to do the research to move from a third to a second class or whatever the people decide.
That's a good point. I appreciate that. Thank you very much for your testimony. We'll move on to start our round robin round again. Who do we have in Anchorage, please?
We have Pat Petrovelli from Rural Cap.
Yes, Pat, go ahead. Are you there, Pat?
Yes, I am. Uh-huh. Thank you for the opportunity to comment on the local government legislative package. I'm from Rural Cap, and in the interest of time, these are the preliminary preliminary comments, and they incorporate those of Bob Lohr, the deputy director.
That would be just fine, and hello to Bob. We'll be however you want to work it, Pat. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. On behalf of Rural Cap, I urge you to schedule additional hearings on these bills during the week of March 17th. The Rural Citizens Participation Conference will be meeting in Juneau that week, and many of the delegates would like to testify directly on these bills after they've had a chance to study the committee substitutes thoroughly. The process by which these bills were developed has been a model one, starting from the August 1979 Symposium on Local Government to an extensive schedule of hearings throughout rural Alaska and finally to the draft legislation. Along the same lines, Senate Bill 348 should require state agencies to provide for public participation before making any major decisions that affect the district. Okay, the legislative local government study's final report stressed self-government, which ought to mean local involvement. The bill, Senate Bill 349, there are no provisions in A1 and 2 requiring either group to involve anyone or any organization in the region being studied, which just reiterates people's concerns for more local involvement. That's lacking in that bill. In Senate Bill 349, it provides for assistance for developing of regional management programs in unorganized boroughs, but in the report, the priorities seem to be reversed. In the local government studies final report, and under regional strategy and planning studies, it says the strategy study fund will provide assistance for regional studies that will address economic, social, and physical aspects of the unorganized boroughs and provide the means by which people in each region can participate with governments in establishing policies and programs for the region. And then it says studies will also address the feasibility and viability of organized borough incorporation. In the bill, this is completely reversed. Topics which are optional include the ones that were listed first in the report, which are the economic development potential, the determination of housing and capital facilities, and an examination of demographic, social, and environmental factors. These topics are of utmost importance in planning a regional management program. The requirement to provide an analysis and recommendations concerning incorporation of a borough government is the main required topic. And then that requires a conclusion which cannot be intelligently reached without considering the factors which are currently optional. That is why they should be required in all contracts. The optional topics should be required, but where the information is already available, it should be included in the report because that information is necessary to provide the people residing in the boroughs with the tools they need to make an informed decision as to their own development. Okay, the bills in this package, especially SB 349 and 348, should be consolidated. SB 349 ought to be passed first. If it doesn't pass, then neither should SB 348. State financial support of a regional strategy planning process for rural Alaska ought to happen before boundaries are drawn. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments, Pat, and those have been noted in earlier testimony. I think they're very good. The one you're referring to about the optional part really being necessary as a precondition to doing the regional government. I appreciate those comments and they're valid. Thank you very much for your testimony. And I assume that covered for Bob Lohr. If you have anything more, get it to us. I don't think we have anyone from Soldotna, do we, at Kotzebue?
Yes, Madam Chairman, our next witness will be Bruce Grist from Nevada Regional Corporation.
Yes, we'd be very happy to hear your testimony. Go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'd like to make three generalized short statements on three Senate bills. One is on the Senate Bill 351, and it's relating to state aid to local government. I myself have been involved in local government as city council member in public on several occasions. And I understand perfectly why this is stressed because our revenue sharing in Selwick has a lot of times been supplemented by bingo games, raffles, and volunteers. And we've been in red several times, and this affects the delivery of services in critical times, such as the absence of needed police protection during times when we don't have the financial status to continue the service. And in the past, the cost of energy, transportation, electricity have gone up in substantial increases, while the revenue sharing remains relatively the same. And I guess my point is we have to keep in mind the inflationary factor. In Senate Bill 351, it should include, if it doesn't, the unincorporated villages also. We support also Senate Bill 348. If the legislation includes language to ensure that the option of whether to organize as a borough or not is given and not mandated. Our remote areas such as ours are not developed to a point as yet to have a tax base to support the local portion of supporting the fiscal needs of operating a borough, and it might take years for our area to develop to that point. Outside Kotzebue, for instance, right now, our income per capita is well under $3,000 a year. And even right now, some of the villages have problems in supporting the local sales tax. If other regions plan to incorporate then into a borough, then perhaps it should be assured that sufficient funds be available to form the borough. We also support the boundaries, and this will conform to both the REAA and Angstrom regional boundaries. We also support 349 because the planning process basically educates both the federal and state agencies as well as the local villages on who the beneficiaries basically will be at the end of such planning processes. That's all I have now. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. I do want to assure you, because I think it's a terribly important comment, that we are talking about voluntary as opposed, in other words, it's optional to move ahead into the regional strategy. It's optional and up to the people of the area to move toward organized government. There are not mandatory features, and I think that's a very important thing that you must, you know, that needs to be reiterated, because there's quite a difference between mandating areas to move ahead and having the option to do so. Thank you very much for your comments. We would move on then to Bethel, and we showed earlier that Harold Napoleon was there. I don't know, Bethel, who do you have?
Okay, Madam Chairman, with this last witness, that concludes all the witnesses from Bethel. His name is Tim Kroll, T-R-O-L-L, from the City of St. Mary's.
Fine. Thank you. Mr. Stroll, won't you go ahead?
Yes, Madam Chairman. I am currently the city manager over the City of St. Mary's, and I think I can speak on behalf of the council when we say that we support the earlier statements of Eddie Hoffman. But I think just for right now, I would like to just specifically focus a little bit on Senate Bill 351. We, of course, support it. We think the funds provided in this bill will significantly help the rural communities in the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta. I did have two stylistic changes. One that Carl Jack did point out earlier. We would like to see the or in line 10 change to an and. And also in line 11, where it reads, a borough of any class which is entitled to state aid under AS 4318010. I have that statute in front of me right now, 4318010, and it does set up several categories under which municipalities receive aid, and they have to have the power to provide certain services and also exercise that power. Many of the rural communities out here do not have the power to provide some of the services that are set out in 4318010. Some of those powers are like police, fire, pollution control, parks and recreation, and planning. And it's not really clear from the bill whether a municipality has to have the power and exercise all the powers under the categories listed under 4318010. Whether if a municipality simply exercises power under one of those categories, it will then qualify for the $25,000. And the legislative intent seems to be a little unclear, and I would suggest a change in line 11 to read, borough of any class which is entitled to state aid under any of the provisions of AS 4318010, which would seem to make it clear that rural communities will be included under this bill. And that's all I have to say, Madam Chairman. Thank you for the opportunity.
I thank you very much. That brings up a new point, and we will check that out. It's my feeling that the fact of incorporation is adequate to mean that those would come, and it is not dependent on the provision of any powers. We will check that out, because certainly, as you stated, that is was the intent of the legislation. Thank you very much for your testimony. We would go to Fairbanks, and who do we have there, please?
Madam Chairman, we have William C. Williams, and he is also representing the Tenenbaum Chief.
Yes, Mr. Williams, would you go ahead, please?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chairman. I'm glad to hear some of the comments coming from rural Alaska and the impacts they see these bills having. I got one short statement, then I'd like to go into some comments and clarification on some of our issues. This statement I'm about to make came out of a Pacific Mountain Times, which is a circular. It comes from rural organizations and communities in the West Coast. And it seems to be quite pertinent that we're not the only ones having these kind of problems of local control. And the title of it is A Case for Citizen Involvement. Development will occur in rural areas regardless of anything we do. because of population pressure and economic necessity. Impacts of development may or may not be desirable from the viewpoint of area residents. We need to question who will decide the nature and kind of development which takes place and how the voice of the home folk can be heard. There are a number of possible actors in the rural development decision-making process: government agencies, local elected officials, property owners, corporate boards, environmentalists, and rarely the folks at large may be involved. Conflicts which precede development decisions often pit exploiters against preservationists. Regardless of which side wins, the primary impact of most development decisions will be on the folks. In general, they hear about it after the fact. At best, their voice is muted by the clamor of strong vested interests. In the past few years, there's been substantial movement from cities into rural areas. In addition to the impact of business and industrial development, many individuals are seeking simpler, more self-sufficient, humane lives in the country. Some state and federal programs are supporting population dispersion as a solution to urban problems. This solution may satisfy the long-term state interest, but in the short term, it places a tremendous burden on units of local government. Local government faces the task of protecting traditional lifestyles and values while expanding essential services. The factors which bring city folk to rural Alaska are those which kept rural folks at home. Continued quality of rural life is an issue which must concern the forces of rural economic development. Yet this quality is endangered by development. Since rural areas are bearing the brunt of problems created by change, it seems that state and federal agencies must provide support for local government. Local government needs help in shaping community attitudes, developing long-range plans, and providing for services which should be planned in advance of development. In general, conditions have forced local government to react rather than anticipate and direct events. Local direction should start in the schools, with the civic groups, with the media, and with the local officials themselves. I would hate to see us build a fence around rural Alaska to keep the migration out, but I would also hate to see migrants bring the burdens they are escaping with them. I would much rather share the beauty of life we enjoy. I think it can be done, but it won't happen if we fail to make the effort to involve, inform, and listen to the people. My constituency is mostly left out of the decision-making process. Rural Alaskans are seldom the movers and shakers in public policy. Yet no economic development decision should be made without an analysis of its effects on these people. Environmental impact statements are generally required before developments take place. It's time we gave people impact statements equal consideration. We may delay growth and development, but we can't stop it. Our option is to shape and direct it by defining our goals and developing concessions as to what our communities ought to look like 5, 10, and 20 years from now. There are vast resources in the rural regions to be developed, managed, conserved, or locked up. Special interests are present and prepared to do battle in each situation. The majority of folk are on the sidelines, vaguely aware of development impact. It is our challenge to involve them in the decisions that affect their lives. It's quite interesting to note that we're having these same problems and same concerns in rural Alaska that were stated in this circular. I changed some of the titles to say State, Alaska State, and Alaska Rural Residents, where they were just names of different organizations and different entities in the circular. Again, some of the basic concerns were outlined by Chris Anderson and Ray Kent. But again, I'd like to reiterate in Senate Bill 351, there's no provision in this bill for funding for communities that aren't organized under state law. I think this is totally unfair. These communities are having the same problems as the organized communities. They're taxed just like everybody else, but they don't have the benefits of receiving those taxes back in any kind of a plan now authorized by the state. I think in those instances where a lot of our communities are organized, the organization is just in name only and not in process or in actuality. I think it was something that was just sold a lot of our communities because it was told that was a good idea. I think the same thing is happening in this legislation now with 348. You say it's an option. But a lot of the rural people aren't looking at it as an option. They read these bills and sometimes are quite confused because it looks like the state is trying to force organized government on them. We've been into this type of activity now for about 2 years in trying to develop strategy plans. I heard somebody comment they would like to see 349 introduced prior to 348. I think that makes a lot of good sense. Without proper planning, without proper communication with the rural folks, it makes no sense to even pass 348. With that, Madam Chairman, I'll end my comments.
Fine. Thank you very much, Mr. Williams. We'll go, just take a quick check. Anybody at Dillingham? Then next on the line would be Nome, and who do we have there, Bob?
Madam Chairman, I have Caleb Bungawi, who is representing Quirk Incorporated.
Fine. Go ahead, Caleb. Happy to have you.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'll quickly go through some of my comments on the proposed bills. I'll refer to the Senate versions. On Senate Bill 348, on the Article 2 section, where the, on the data, placement of data information, I think there should be some provision on Part 4 where that information presented to the governor and the legislature and public, some provision for public hearing, since this information will be used for the consideration of the state budget and other considerations. It therefore will make it very important that the people be involved in either in the development or in the final information that's related to the state government. On
excuse me, Caleb, could we get the number of that bill again? Somehow I missed that.
Senate Bill 348, on Article 2, on a data collection of data information, there's part four that refers to providing this information to the governor and the legislature for consideration of the state budget. And therefore, I feel that the information that's collected by these agencies should be reviewed by the public prior to presentation to the legislature.
Thank you.
And also on section on the exemptions and modifications, part B, on where it says that the boundaries of a district may be modified by the legislature, I don't feel that the state agency should have this power to modify any boundaries. They are set to serve the people and not the or that they should not be to be served at their pleasure. On on the charter election, I think there should be some provision for the preparation of the charter for some public hearings on a particular part. It currently just goes from the Electment Commission to the Community Regional Affairs for applicability whether it applies with the laws of the state of Alaska. I think there should be provisions where the public will have input into the charter. On also on the 90-day requirement, on some of the days that are on this particular bill, I think some of them are a little short. It probably should read between 30 and 60 days, and also on the 60 to 90 days, particularly in the rural areas where it's, sometimes it's difficult to get people involved, especially if you have short notice. And then on page 5, part B, 90 days may be a little short for the on the compliance with the laws that the Community Regional Affairs feel that the commission has met. So that ends my comments on the Senate Bill 348. Again, I would like to reiterate that we have some problems as this kind of is a step towards forcing the unorganized boroughs into organizing into boroughs. By division of the areas, you create natural areas that, in essence, would become boroughs, whether it may be necessary or not. Senate Bill 349. I like this bill, but I think there's that provision about requiring a recommendation whether there should be a formation for incorporation for program or not is something that I don't feel comfortable with. And also, although the districts are already identified in this particular bill, this addresses whether there should be a portion of the area to be organized in the borough or not. There seems to be some conflicting portions in this particular bill. On Senate Bill 350, which is to the Policy and Development Office, I suppose if they can meet the January 31 deadline, that's fine, but I think that might be a little unrealistic to provide all the information to the governor concerning whether the state agency can comply with this or not. On Senate Bill 351, we support this bill, although I'd like to point out that some of the municipal governments may not be active, and therefore they'd be pleasantly surprised if they get a check for $25,000. On Senate Bill 352, if the legislature wants to, I think this might create a monster for the legislature, but if they want to do this, it is fine with me. I think it's, the bill is good, but I think it may create a burden for the legislature. We have no comments on the Senate Bill 353. On 354, on the section that applies to the division of land, having a zoning and fire authority, I particularly have some problems with this, and also since there only is a coastal zone management program available for the districts, this may, this section may not be necessary. And also on the single assemblies for a seat of a borough government and school board, again, this may create problems in some of the areas. That's currently all I have. I thank you for this opportunity.
Thank you very much, Caleb. I appreciate your comments. And I just would like to point out to you that, in fact, the Division of Lands currently has the platting and planning power in unorganized boroughs. And this would not change the status, but it was necessary to retain that section because of the doing away with the home rule boroughs. Let me, I mean third class boroughs. Palmer, is that not correct?
Basically, yeah. They have planning.
They have the zoning power, planning. I'm sorry, not the planning. So it's not adding to what they have. They already have that power. And that's been one of the major things we've looked at, the whole thing of the coastal resource districts. There's a problem in those areas that are not organized into governments that have the ability to enforce the plans. And right now the only authority lies with the division in the Department of Natural Resources. So that is an area of concern. Thank you very much. We'll go on now to I believe Juno did Roger Ellington, did you wish to give testimony today?
Madam Chairman, I'll make this very brief. The speaking basically as a former assemblyman and a former Coastal Policy Council member and officially as a citizen, basically I support the package from the activities in those two bodies and would make a couple of minor comments. One of them has to do with the boundaries, and from our work with the Coastal Policy Council and setting up the coastal boundaries, would suggest that to the extent possible the boundaries be left as flexible for as long as possible, because as these plans which are developed under Senate Bill 349 come down, I think there's going to be some changes indicated. However, I should also indicate that to the extent possible the boundaries should be coincident with the school board boundaries that exist, the coastal resource boundaries that exist. And because we're talking about private lands that are basically within native regional corporations, to that extent they should, and that's what you've addressed already. the 349 appears to put into the rest of the state some of the activities that we're already taking into consideration under, as far as planning is concerned, in the coastal areas. I would concur with the comment that January 31, 1981 for the on Senate Bill 350 is probably tight. I believe under the Coastal Management Act, the DPDP was required to make sure that all departments had their regulations in line with the coastal management regulations by a time certain, and I don't recall the time certain, but if it hasn't passed, it's darn close to being passed, and I don't believe that's been done. And the net result is if you have an unrealistic time frame, it doesn't get done, and that means it doesn't get done. It isn't that it takes a little bit longer, it just doesn't get done. On Senate Bill 352, I appreciate the fiscal notes on the bills that relate to municipalities. To the extent that it's possible to do it, I would suggest that this be amended to require fiscal notes on departmental regulations that affect municipalities also, and I believe there's a bill in to accomplish that. That's all I have, Madam Chairman, with just a brief statement on the third class borough. We know from coastal management that we have a void up there. We're not exactly sure how to handle it. And we've had that problem in coastal management, and I see that this bill is written in such a way that it gives the commissioner more discretion, and I think that that's desirable at this point. Thank you.
Fine. Thank you very much, Roger. We'll go now. Well, we didn't find out. Did we have anyone at Valdez? I think they're on the line. Is that not correct? I think I got some note. Is there anyone at Valdez? Apparently, no one there. We'll go back to Anchorage. And how many more people do you have to testify there, please?
We have one more person here and one more person who indicated he was coming back.
All right, fine. Whoever that individual is, why don't you identify yourself and go ahead, please?
Hello, Ron Malott here. Currently attending this as a matter of interest as a student on state and local government. I believe I would be addressing primarily Senate Bill number 351 in conjunction with much of the testimony I've heard today. I can hear a lot of pros and cons in favor of and opposition to the various bills, which reminds me, and I think it should remind us all, that the State Department of Community and Regional Affairs should have been aware of all of these pros and cons prior to the proposed bills, and that their groundwork should have included the people. I believe I heard Gaelic Pangawi mentioning that. The people should be reached, and their consideration should be incorporated into any legislative bill, even if it is a proposal. As an individual, I question the constitutionality of compelling unorganized boroughs to become organized. I view the issues placed at large in the form of legislation for their consideration a form of blackmail or the majority population ruling the lesser population. Organization of unorganized boroughs or cities prior to the resolvement of the D2 issue is questionable. Nobody knows what is coming or going. And identification of transit residents need be considered in the evaluation of necessity of organization of boroughs or cities, the same as it should be considered relative to regional educational attendance areas, as there exists there also the question of transit, who is going to or coming from the educational facilities in any organized or unorganized city or borough. There's a lot more I could say, but I think I'd rather listen than speak. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, Mr. Malott. I appreciate your comments. I want you to know that there were extensive hearings made. I think we'd have a legislature that's why we're having teleconference, and as I indicated, we've mailed out many, many copies of the report. There's been a sincere effort to not to do this simply with a fiat. It is not the department, it is the joint committees of the legislature that have carried on with this study, and we're certainly attempting to be responsive to the many interests that we do here. I would like to repeat, because I think it's absolutely vital, that this is not a mandatory provision. We had a mandatory borough act that formed with one exception, that of the North Slope Borough, formed the current existing boroughs that are out there, and I believe Haynes too was also an example. This is not a mandatory borough bill. It's very important that distinction be made, because that's something we heard loud and clear, that the people want to move ahead at their pace, and this particular bill does make, these set of bills makes that provision that people are not forced to move ahead. Hopefully it will cut out duplication of service delivery on the part of the state, but it adds no powers that do not presently exist. But I do thank you for your testimony. We'll move on. I believe no one in Saldatna. Do we have anyone remaining in Kotzebue, please?
Yes, Madam Chairman, we have one more. Mr. Gene Moore, the city manager of Kotzebue.
Gene, we'll also ask you to give us a report on your windmill.
Hope that report, Carlos, the blades came off on January the 4th and are still laying on the ground.
Whoops.
We had some high wind, and it, the blades came off, the brakes didn't hold because of the extreme temperatures we'd experienced about 3 weeks. And it, I guess the shaft couldn't take it when the brake finally cut in, it, the blades came off, and they're going to replace it the 25th of this month, so we'll know more about it next month.
Good. Thanks for the report. Go ahead, Gene. We'll look forward to hearing from you.
I don't have a whole lot, Arliss, on this. We see this House Bill, or Senate Bill 348, as the first step of organization to the organized boroughs, or getting them to be an organized borough. And we realize that here in Kotzebue and the Nana region that we're unique, and we've done a lot of planning, and people are looking at this. But I don't think we really need the Senate Bill 348, because if we do decide to become organized, we have provisions already in the code, and anyone else has those. I'm certainly glad to hear that this is not a mandatory bill, as everyone has been led to believe that it would be. We hope that no one will ever put the language in there that it will be mandatory, because we all know the lesser amount of government we have, the better government can be. The planning bills, we strongly support. You know, we have the regional strategy plan going here in the region, and I think that the whole state, in particular unorganized borough, needs planning. But the one provision that I've heard today, and particularly Senate Bill 350, act relating to the responsibilities of the division, policy and planning for coordination. It looks to me like this is something you could tell your commissioners there in Juneau to do and not have to spend time enacting a bill. We do our coordination out here, and I think it's maybe need to talk to the commissioners in Juneau and not have a bill that will affect all of the local governments and people. The problem really lies with the state that not coordinating amongst their various divisions. We all know that happens every day. Senate Bill 351, as you know, I spoke this when you were up for the hearing here, and one gentleman spoke a while ago about the $25,000 is what we really needed. I think you need to read it. This is an additional state aid and not something that everybody gets. Everyone will get the $25,000 plus any of the other services performed in the the last statute 4-3-18-10, this $25,000 plus cost of living in addition to what the services that they now receive revenue sharing. We strongly urge that, because as I told you, and the people in the hearing here, we have the small village of Pocock, it's less than $6,000 a year, and that's not enough to pay for the paperwork that takes place. Senate Bill 352, if I read that and understand what it's saying, I think it could be cut down real short. Don't mandate any programs that you can't provide the money for. Don't put a new burden on the small municipalities or large as either one. And when the money stops coming from the state on these programs, the program stops. I think it's probably a short answer to it. Senate Bill 353, really have no problem with that, other than I think you should include all municipalities, not just limited to the corporation, second class boroughs. I think everyone should have the choice of making self-determination and shouldn't be put to the expense of going through a first-class borough, a first-class city study. They should have the option of going from a second-class corporation to a city or a borough to a home rule.
He agrees with that. He agrees with that.
Adding another burden on expense-wise to all the election candidacy. Ballots, hearings, all that required.
Oh, he's talking about everyone. He's
take care of all this, but it's changing that to read all municipalities but have the option of going straight from a second class city or a borough to a home rule city or borough. And Arliss, I appreciate the opportunity to make these comments to the committee. I know that you do a lot of work on them. And I think there's still some more work that needs to be done before it's totally enacted.
Gene, I think I need to make something clear, because I don't want to leave up anything that creates more confusion. When I talk in terms of mandating, we are not mandating boroughs. We are not mandating a form of government. But it does call for the drawing of lines in SB 3348, and I don't want to have given a false impression on that. But was that clear from what I said or not?
Yeah, we understand that you're drawing lines. I don't guess we have any objection to drawing lines as long as they don't really mean a whole lot to us.
Well, yeah, I thought we were communicating, but someone just sent me a note, and I didn't want to leave a false impression. And thank you very much for your testimony. Let's go and check now with Bethel. Did we have anyone there, please? Where are we on time? Oh, all right. We'll go to Fairbanks. And how many left at Fairbanks, please?
Just two, Madam Chairman.
Yes, if we could hear from whoever you have first. We do have a bit more time on the teleconference, but still a number of people to be heard. You've all been very patient, and I appreciate that. And I haven't, again, imposed those time limits strictly, but we'll appreciate your realizing we do have some other people to hear from. Who do we have next, please?
Wolfgang Falk.
Fine. Wolfgang, won't you go ahead and identify yourself, and then we'll look forward to your comments.
Thank you very much, Madam Chairman. My name is Wolfgang Falk, and I live in Fairbanks. You want the address, 98 7th Avenue. And I'd like to ask you a question. I sent a letter to all legislators, myself open letter, dated January 28th. Did you receive this letter, and do you put it in as testimony?
Wolfgang, as a matter of fact, we've had two communications from you, one in response to the packet of bills and an earlier one that dealt with the issue of the suit that you have regarding action taken previously by the legislature. And yes, that information is available, certainly not only to this committee, but to, or was made available to all members of the legislature. And I have a number of comments There won't be time to communicate those today, but I'm hoping that I'll be able to get back to you specifically, because I think the intent and how the legislation is actually formed is somewhat different than perhaps how you were viewing it. So yes, we do have that, and I appreciate the time you took in getting that to us. So you go ahead and tell us what you'd like to today.
Okay, I'd like to make it as brief as possible, and I might ask a few questions. As you know, in that last letter, I said that these bills, all interrelated and the enactment, will definitely eliminate the power system as set forth or envisioned by the Constitution or the people who set it forth in the Constitution. And a little bit of freedom reserved for the Alaskan voters over local government and local self-determination, as demanded by the Alaska Constitution, will be replaced by a state socialistic dictatorship under the governor and its Department of Community and Regional Affairs. I concluded my comments by saying that these bills, all of them, cannot be legally enacted without first changing the Constitution. Therefore, I urge you actually to defeat the thing within committee, let it die. Or if you really like to report it out of committee, I recommend to refer them further to the Judiciary Committee. Let me go through the bill very briefly. HB 580, I will talk to the House bill number. If enacted, will generally speaking establish each existing regional educational attendance area or school district as an unorganized borough, and will provide for their direct incorporation as a vulnerable borough. HB 581 will authorize the Office of the Governor to study and to report to the legislature recommendations requiring legislation regarding development and implementation of state services to districts. Now this is very important because each district or each existing borough, including the Fairbanks North Star borough and I believe the municipality of Anchorage, will be considered a state service district if HB 580 is enacted. What kind of services are you talking about? Could you quickly tell me that, what kind of
thing
service are you talking about?
Wolfgang, all that bill refers to, it does absolutely nothing toward adding any powers. What happens now is that the state has delivered services and each department and agency has a series of lines that they use. There's frequent lack of coordination overlap. The intent of this section is merely that they will recognize these lines that are drawn so that there can be coordination and really more efficient delivery to the people that are getting the services. It has nothing to do with a change in the services that are being delivered. And this is something that's been talked about years. One of the major things that we found when we went to rural Alaska is the right hand doesn't know what the left hand and the right foot and the left foot don't coordinate. And this is merely saying to the state agencies, you will recognize where people live, you will recognize some lines, and you will coordinate your services. And it should be of great benefit to the people as opposed to adding any level of services. It only adds a coordinative factor. And I don't understand your concern. It does not provide for any kind of quote state districts to be formed.
Okay, in other words, if I understand you right, no municipal services as set forth in Title 40 and in Chapter 48 of Title 29 will be administered on a statewide area. If
services delivery that exists as will continue to exist as it does, except that the agencies will need to look at the regional lines that are established, and so it should improve, hopefully, the coordination and delivery of those services.
Well, if this is the case, then I think you should form something like an organized, unorganized borough or a fourth class borough, where the legislature would still act as the assembly in case of in case municipal services are needed on a service area basis, as set forth in 290320.
Wolfgang, we won't be able to get, you know, back and forth, but the whole option of this is not to mandate what the people would have, but to set up a structure whereby they can look at their own area through this, taking a look at how government should be provided, to take a look at the social and economic, the other things, and then make that determination. We are not out to tell the people how they should handle their local affairs, and that's the whole concept we're trying to convey here, is to allow for local option to take effect and for areas to determine what can best serve them in the way of government structure. That's a very important part of this legislation.
Yes, I recognize that. And for that reason, if you come up with so-called home rule incorporation of a service area, district or whatever you say, state service district, then in this case, what you would do is they could incorporate as a first class or similar, like say, with the power of first class city, which is totally contrary to the mandate of maximum local control.
Wolfgang, again, I'll let you go through and not interrupt you, but the point is they would follow through on all of the provisions that would call under state existing statute, that would call for the local boundary commission involvement, petitioned by the local people, all of the other steps. The only thing that we are doing basically is to allow, right now you have to go from first class borough to be able to go to home rule. We are recommending in this legislation that you can go from an organized status, second class borough or first class borough to home rule. It has to be, however, at petition and involvement of the local people as specified under current law. So, you know, it does not mandate anything happening, nor people have an additional option as opposed to limiting their options that they presently have. I'll try not to interrupt, but why don't you make your comments, and what we might do is to, you know, we can communicate to further by telephone on some of these, but really this is your opportunity, and we do have other people listening, so I'll try not to interject and allow you to tell us what you like, and I really appreciate your comments.
Yeah, I like to go on this because I think it is very important. If you incorporate as first class or third class, second class or third class borough as a first class borough, you clearly violate the basics of the Constitution. Yes, you could incorporate according to the Constitution a second class borough as a home rule borough, but only under the provisions of the second class borough. That means that service areas can only be established by voter approval, and that additional services may only be acquired through the approval of the voters. And you will eliminate this by eliminating the second class and the third class borough. You very effectively eliminate the second class borough with your last legislation. And I have that thing in court, as you know. But the third class borough to wipe out means that you wipe out the basic principle of what was set forth in the Constitution, where the people determine themselves their local affairs or whatever they like to have on services. Now, I'd like to briefly go in a surplus for power because they seem to be highly misunderstood or misrepresented, as indicated by the mayor of Kenai and of course the testimony you have contained. A surplus for can exercise any municipal powers, because it is a municipal policy. And the only way they could acquire additional powers would be as described by statute, and a surplus board can only acquire additional municipal service if the people either petition for it or put the question on the ballot, or the assembly put the question on the ballot, and the people vote for it. Now, the only power not granted outright to a surplus board are those of planning, flooding, and zoning. Only after the majority of the voters of the entire borough, a surplus borough may provide for planning, flooding, and zoning in a manner provided for boroughs, but may exercise this power only on a service area basis. Now, this is very clear. The first class cities shall, and second class cities may provide for planning, flooding, and zoning. The state has no zoning power within a surplus borough.
except with any portion covered by the Alaska Coastal Management Program, if the municipality has not done so. However, the State Division of Lands may provide for planning for only the purpose of hearing and acting on the petition for the change or vacation of plat. Now, I'd like to say at this point again that the Community and Regional Affairs Agency should never be granted zoning power. The question came up, or the comment was made during during today's hearing, that there's only one surface bore. How come? That must be no good. Well, I tell you how come. The commissioner of the Community and Regional Affairs Agency, McInerney, was always opposed against the surface bore. 2 years ago, she said she wanted to eliminate it. And when the surface bore bill came before the governor, she urged the governor not to sign that bill. Colonel McCarter also consistently opposed the surplus law bill. Now, the MIC people and the legislature put this law on the books to be exercised. Yet the agency goes out around and tells everybody, well, the surplus law is no good. The surplus law has no planning and zoning. An outright lie, but they are doing it. And I have proved it, and you know it's on tape. And this is why we don't have surplus laws, because the people don't know what the truth is. I did talk to other legislators from Fairbanks before the session started, and I asked to have an investigation of concerning this of the Community and Regional Affairs Agency to come up with the truth of what happened over the last 3 years, why there is no more local participation in forming government. We had testimony at, when you were in Delta. I was there too. And you heard that people were trying to form a board, get the boundary commission and whatever kind of discouraged the people because the board was enlarged, including TOC. And then there came a controversy over who is going to be the seat for the board, TOC or Delta, instead of letting the people have their small the way of trying to incorporate a smaller area. Now, I urge you again to look into the possibility of either a House or Senate or legislative investigation into the doings of the Community and Regional Affairs Agency. I am very disturbed and very confident too. My conviction is that the people's will is violated and that the agency did not fulfill the demands of the Constitution by not telling the people the truth of the law in order to form local government. Now, I'm getting advised to point it out. If you have any additional questions, I'm sure there are a lot. I will send you something in writing on that thing.
Fine. I appreciate your comments. I would like to point out to you that the legislation does not eliminate the second class borough. The only one that's proposed for elimination is the third class. I appreciate your comments and we'll look forward to receiving more testimony from you, Wolfgang. Thank you very much. I don't believe we have anyone in Dillingham, do we? Or Nome? Anybody in Nome? You've been very patient and I truly do appreciate your testimony. Who do we have in Nome?
Madam Chairman, we have no further witnesses in Nome.
Fine, thank you very much. I appreciate that. Wonder if we could just take a quick check and see if we have anyone that would care to give additional testimony. Let's check with Anchorage. Anyone there?
Yes, Madam Chairman, Mr. Dave Walsh is here.
Fine. Dave would like to hear from you. Mr. Walsh is the chairman of the Anchorage Municipality. Dave, go ahead, and I'm sorry we couldn't get you on a little earlier. I know you've had a tight schedule.
Well, that's fine, Arliss. I'm just glad I made it back in time. I'm also speaking on behalf of the Alaska Municipal League today, of which I'm president this year. We have not taken formal Municipal League board action on the proposed bill, but I imagine that we will at our next board meeting, which is tentatively scheduled for the end of this month or the beginning of March. I've gone through the bills, and I have the Senate versions in front of me, so I'll be referring to those by number. And in general, I think that they're excellent. I think it was a marvelous effort during the past month to put this together. together, and I would heartily endorse the bill as an individual and also as an assembly person. And as the president, hopefully within the next couple of weeks, we will provide you with formal resolution support for the municipal board. We go through them bill by bill. 348 is the first one. I see two conceptual problems generally, and it's not with the bill as written, but with perhaps the effect of it and what could result from an overreaching administrative approach. By that, I certainly don't mean to apply the current administration.
Anchorage, could you switch to another microphone? We can't hear you over some interference.
I wonder if Twilight check and see if that one's off.
We've got the loud buzzing on the line.
Okay, just a minute. I'll have to go get another microphone. One moment.
You push it back to turn it off.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, you maybe plug into your other jack.
She's going to get another microphone. There'll be two seconds delay. She had to go to a different office.
I've never met her.
Madam Chairman, is this mic any better?
That's fine. Go ahead, Dave.
Two conceptual problems that I have with it is that there's a natural tendency that once lines are drawn, to set those lines in concrete and make it very difficult to change. I would hate to see that happen with this approach, because I think as a first step, it's excellent. But whether the lines that would be drawn as a result of this bill would be or should be final lines is another question completely. And it's more of a problem of just human inertia than I think that in the bill itself. And I would suggest that the legislative history, if the committee agrees with that comment, contains some pretty definite language that the lines are not meant to be set in concrete or meant to endure forever, but are essentially the first drawing of what will hopefully be a fluid approach until the final local governmental lines in the state are established. The second problem that I see, and again, it's not with the legislation itself, but perhaps how it's interpreted, is that these districts could essentially become an administrative tool to provide local government services through a state function. In other words, the potential could arise for coterminous boundaries with different authorities, for example, in Anchorage, to take Anchorage as a proposed district. I would not want to see a situation arise where there were central district administrators that would have as much influence or power, if you will, as the local elected representatives here. I don't think that's as much a problem in Anchorage or Fairbanks or Juneau, Sitka, Kensington, as it might be in other areas of the state.
Yeah.
In terms of specific amendments, and these are somewhat picky, and obviously are a result of my local government bias. On page 3 of Senate Bill 348, top of the page, subparagraph 4, the section itself deals with the functions of the board, etc., providing information to the governor, legislature, etc. From a municipal point of view, I think we would like to see.
Dave, just a moment. We're getting terrible static there again. I wonder, is there anything we can do?
Just in Anchorage.
You've got a problem in Anchorage. Did you change your mic, change your plug?
We changed mics once. Let him fiddle with
it
for a second.
Yeah, see if you can try another jack or something.
It could perhaps be the weather, too. I don't know if there's any kind of antenna system, but it's very windy here today.
Dave, that's just a bit better, not much, but go ahead.
Okay, I'll continue while she's going to get a check. Again, on page 3, subparagraph 4, at the top of the page, my personal preference would be that it be spelled out in the legislation that part of the function would be to provide information to local government units that may exist within the larger state service area type approach. Other than that, I think the 348 is excellent. The amendment to chapter 19, section 2919, et cetera, are excellent. I think that's a very fine, workable approach. With regard to 349, I also think that this is excellent. As you know, the league has a membership that does not only include the larger municipalities, but is made up to about a one-third degree from municipalities that are rural in nature. And in fact, the majority of the votes in any municipal league convention or conference are cast by those who are currently not in organized boroughs. And on their behalf, I would say that I think that 349 is very good. In terms of 350, I would echo what Don Gilman said at the beginning of the hearing, that I would have no comment on behalf of the municipality of the league. That's an internal state matter. I would add parenthetically, personally, I like it. Anytime the system can report directly to the legislature, I think that's a very positive thing. In terms of 351, I can't give higher accolades. I think that is an excellent approach, particularly for the smaller communities. As the lady from Kotzebue testified in an earlier hearing, I think that it's just a form of valuable service for the rural second-class cities. I think it's excellent. 352 is, I think, the best of the package. I think it's marvelous. The fiscal note requirement is something that local government has wanted for a long time. And I'm sure we're all aware, a lot of times the federal government mandates programs for the state and local governments that are beyond our ability financially. And I think that this approach ensures that that same kind of problem is not going to arise with regard to the state and local government. The 353, I'm also very much in favor of, again, because it increases local options. 354, and I don't think the league would want to take any official position, and I certainly wouldn't personally. As Don Gilman noted previously, there is some controversy within Kenai Borough and in other areas of the state with regard to the elimination of the third class boroughs, and I would suggest that look directly to them for your input, and they'll be the ones that are less expensive. In summary, I would say thank you on behalf of local governments for this effort. I think it's marvelous, and I'm glad to support it. That concludes my testimony.
Thank you very much, Dave. I appreciate your comments. Do we have anyone else in Anchorage, or was that the final person?
That was the final witness in Anchorage.
Good, thank you. Well, I mean, not good that that's all, but good that we were able to accommodate everyone within the time we have set for this. I better be a little careful. Just to run through, Saldatna, anyone? Kotzebue, anyone else?
No, Madam Chairman, we have no other witnesses.
Good. Thank you. Bethel, anyone from there? Fairbanks, you're next. Anyone remaining there?
Yes, Madam Chairman. We have Alan Busby.
Mr. Busby, won't you go ahead?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'd like to give testimony on House Bill 584. And I'm with the Saucer Secession Group. And with our detachment from the North Star Borough, we have been looking over forms of government to replace what we now have. We aren't satisfied with the second-class boroughs due to the fact that we are a rural area and they are more suited for city-wide. A third-class borough, in reviewing what we have to choose from, fits our area more so than anything else. and we find that if this was eliminated, it would be harmful to our community and other outlying rural areas and bush areas. As far as third class borough not having planning zoning, and Salcher area is planning and has tried to develop this area for its needs and has met resistance in some aspects of doing this through this government agency. I would like to recommend that the legislators drop this bill, and if they want to help the unorganized borough, that maybe they form a fourth class borough. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Busby. Just out of general interest, have you petitioned the Local Boundary Commission for the de-annexation? I'm just kind of curious as to what is happening right now.
We have submitted a petition to the Boundary Commission. They will be reviewing it the 29th of this month. And I assume that they will be setting dates for public hearing and how to conduct further on with the detachment.
Fine, I appreciate your comments and thank you for taking time to testify. Let's see, do we have anyone from Dillingham? From Nome, anyone still there?
No, Madam Chairman, we have no further witnesses in Nome.
I think that we've covered everybody on the network. We do have two individuals here. What we might do is have the monitor just check each station quickly so we will be sure we don't have anyone. Then if it's possible, we'd like to stay on the line so you could share the benefit from very two brave souls that have remained with us here. But we'll just take a quick check to see if everybody is there, and then it's your option, of course, whether you want to continue on.
Wally, this is Deborah. Kathy in Anchorage, this is Deborah.
Is
Dorothy in Dillingham, this is Deborah.
Yeah. Yes, Deborah, I do not have any witnesses or observers at this time.
Thank you, Dorothy.
Getting a good overall
image. Yeah,
and
yeah.
One of the things I enjoy.
Deborah, I don't have anyone here at this time to testify.
Thanks, Mary Jo. Mary in Costume, this is Deborah.
Yeah, Deborah, we have no further witnesses, and we ought to be off of her by half an hour taking lunch break.
Okay, good. Thanks. Well learned. Rhoda in Soldata. I think Soldata is on the line.
Deborah only has one witness.
Thanks, Rhoda.
Come again.
This is Deborah. Do you have any more witnesses for this afternoon's teleconference?
No, I do not.
Thanks, Bob. Peggy and Ketchikan.
She's a nice one, didn't she?
Charlie and Sitka, this is Deborah. If there are any sites who do have witnesses, would they now please respond? Also not. Thank you. We're going to go on to Juno testimony now.
Fine. We have Jenny Chipwood, Executive Director of Municipal League. Did you care to make comments today?
I'll wait till next week.
All right. Fine. Thank you very much. And Bruce Aronson is here. If you'd come up and... Bruce, if for the record you'd identify yourself and pull the little thing forward, and then you can just speak in a normal tone and off
hey.
You go. We're pleased that you're here. Did you make a special trip up today?
No, not a special trip. Thank you, though. I tried yesterday morning to attend, and I understand the hearing was over by the time I got in the office.
Well, I'll tell you, we had a hearing and nobody came to dinner, so we went back, and anyhow, we're pleased that you're here now.
I'm hungry. My name is Bruce Aronson. I'm the city manager of Petersburg. A little bit of background. I worked for the Department of Community Regional Affairs for 4 years, especially interesting would be the time of creating the regional school districts in 1975. So I have a little bit of interest in this bill, as well as being a manager of a city in an organized borough. So the package of bills is of great interest to the city of Petersburg. Very briefly, I'd like to address the bills and just generally some concepts of regional government. First, the question I would have would be, why do we have regional government, whether you call it an organized or unorganized, a borough, city, or whatever? And I think the obvious answer is that's to provide area-wide municipal services, including education, police, fire, planning, typical municipal services on a regional basis. Another question would be, do boroughs serve a useful purpose in Alaska? And I think an examination, many people would have to agree that a borough would serve, whether it's an organized or unorganized borough, does serve a useful purpose if it's appropriate to the region and if it's properly structured and has the right formation and representation and is providing the services required. Another question would be, why haven't additional boroughs been formed? I think the latest count is 11, and it's been at 11 for many years, it seems like. I think some of the reasons, at least in my mind, are one is that regional type agencies have been formed in lieu of boroughs to address regional type problems. For example, regional school districts, the REAs, was a formation to provide local control of educational services. Another reason why we don't have additional boroughs would be municipal services are provided by other agencies. For example, the state troopers here in Juneau provide municipal type police services out in the valley. So there's no incentive to provide those municipal services if the state agency is providing them. Also, nonprofit, regional corporations, and other agencies have gotten into the act to provide certain limited services that are typically provided on a municipal basis. The third reason, in many cases, there's just an inadequate tax base. You look at some areas of the state, there's just nothing there to tax, so there's very little in the way of support for local government. So they could form a local government all they'd like, but they wouldn't be able to support that local government if they had the inclination. And finally, probably the biggest reason, at least in my opinion, was that there's the disincentives, and the biggest one is school financing. Mm-hmm. In many cases, it's been proven that to form a local government, you actually lose money on a regional basis. The state financing program is a disincentive, so there'd have to be at least an equalization formula where that there's no disincentive formation of a regional government, and that's probably the biggest stumbling block is the educational financing.
I would point out, Bruce, I'm sure you're aware, but there is a pretty good report out right now, and that matter is before the House Finance, and it does address that in lieu of, and we gave testimony this summer, and it's, whether that concept will go through, but I certainly agree with you.
And very briefly, my summary would be that basically the concept of regional government, whatever you want to call it, is valid in Alaska. It's got to be. It's such vast space up here that you cannot have every community provide a full range of municipal services and expecting the kind of coordination of service and the ability to provide the service at a quality basis. Municipal government should be the agency providing municipal services, not state agencies or quasi municipal agencies, but municipal agencies, whether they're city or borough. that there should be consideration of solving the inadequate tax base. Maybe that means sharing state wealth on some formula on an adequate basis so that the poor areas.